This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We've been over to Rota Vegas, played in the Kelly Pierce teams, 22 teams.
Not too bad.
And who came out on top?
Oh, the Fishers, Liz and Blair Fisher, playing with Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin and Ellen Grant, won comfortably in the end. Second was the Who team, Kevin Hu and Jerry Chen, playing with Herman Wan and Yuzhong Chen. And third was the Jacob team. That was Steph and Tom Jacob playing with Michael Ware and Hugh McGowan. There was also a teams event on at Whangarei on the weekend.
How'd that go?
That was won by the Win team. They had 18 teams. Quite a good turnout. The winners were Fuchsia Wen, Ian Berrington, playing with Paula Bowie and Duncan Badley, coming in ahead of the Palmer team. So second in the Whangarei teams were Barry Palmer, Andrew Tarbutt, Glenys Palmer and Christine Wilson.
Queenstown Bridge Club, they had an open. That was won by Bruce Batchelor and Greg Buzzard over Philip Hensman and Francis Sheehy.
Pretty good numbers there too.
42 pairs, Barry.
What have we got this weekend, Mariana? There's the Auckland Easter Congress, of course, the main event, if you like, with a couple of big events. I see that Levin are running a multi-grade pairs on the Saturday.
On the Saturday,
And Wellington, they've got a mixed pairs on the 1st of April.
Right. Easter Monday.
A couple of things going on.
Yeah, Judge Geordie said that they've got good numbers, so that's awesome. But what's the highest score on one board that you've ever had on the score up?
I honestly couldn't remember, Mariana. There's been some horrible numbers at times.
On our score up, they came back and I said, oh, look, there was a bit of a mix-up on one of the hands. I said, we've got a good score. And then partner said, yeah, we've got a good score on one board too. And you don't normally think it's going to be on the same board, Barry. I thought, you know, it might be whatever, board one, and we were board seven or whatever. Funny when you go scoring away, you go plus 1,100. Your teammates go, what? I said, plus 1,100. And they say plus 1,400 on the same board. I kid you not. 2,500 points. The opponent's open, and I had a 15 count, Barry. Now, whenever do you pass with a 15 count? It's just crazy. You couldn't really overcall. You've got three aces in your hand. I was like, oh, good. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And the opponent's open. You think, pass is a great bid, people.
The option didn't end there, obviously.
No, it didn't. I've got a question for you.
Go on.
Have you got your genius hat on?
Probably not.
When you're playing a weak no trump opening and your partner opens one no trump, 12 to 14, whenever you hold 0 to 3 points opposite that opening, do you think you should consider bidding something straight away? You know that the opponents have got the majority of points. So with 0 to 3, would you chuck in a bid? And if you do, what sort of bid?
Yeah, I mean, you can see why it's worth it. If you think there's a double coming and you're going to be doubled in one no trump, sometimes you can avoid that by bidding first. I guess if you've got a five-card major, you should transfer to it. I think most people would do that. They'd go there. But if you haven't got a five-card major, you should consider stamen.
Right.
And, or you might consider stamen. I'm not saying you should, but you might consider stamen and passing whatever partner responds. See them try and get out of that. The only thing is, though, Mariana, if the hand on your left is about to double, that might be a good idea. But sometimes in those sort of situations, the hand on your right and your hand on your left have both got quite a few points, like maybe up to about 40 in each, and neither of them sort of have a bid. And sometimes one no trump might be just about to get quietly passed out, and they've got game on their way, and you to their rescue by bidding something. So it doesn't come with any guarantees, bidding with nothing. I guess that's not a very good answer to your question. Like lots of things, there's no definite right or wrong answer here. Sometimes it'll be right to bid. Sometimes it'll be right to pass.
Okay. Could you sneak a wee white lie in and transfer partner to a four-card major?
Well, that's a possibility. That is a possibility. I do remember many years ago, their partner opened a weak no trump and they had a rubbish hand with just one spade and four hearts, four diamonds and four clubs. Now, the vulnerability was the important thing here, Mariana. They weren't vulnerable and the opponents were. So they know the opponents have got a vulnerable game on, and it's probably in spades, quite likely in spades. They've only got one of them. Anyway, this person was quite inventive and they transferred their partner to spades. They're singleton. It's made life pretty difficult for the opponents because they both had spades. They couldn't make a takeout double. So they left their partner to play in two spades with 12 points opposite two and a singleton trump opposite three small or something. And of course, it didn't matter that they went six light because it was only 300, whereas the opponents had a cold 620 or 650 on the other way. There's somebody that considered bidding Mariana. Not only did they bid, they transferred their partner to their singleton.
Imagine that.
Now, I'm not recommending it, by the way.
I could just, but Barry said.
Speaking of bad hands, Mariana, I was watching the final of the Vanderbilt, which is a big teams event on at the moment. And on the second to the last hand, there was this amazing hand. Now, we don't usually do hands on the bridge zone because it's a bit hard. And when I say it's an amazing hand, it's not what you might think.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to write it down as you say
Oh, you're
what
going to
it
love it. If you're going to write it down, you're going to love it. This
is.
is the
Okay.
hand they've got. 7-4-2 of spades.
Yep.
They've got the four and the three of hearts.
Beautiful.
They've got the seven and the six and the two of diamonds.
Yep.
And then they've got this five card club suit, Mariani. Are you ready for it?
Yep.
It's 7-6-5-4-3. Now,
Can't get any worse than that.
they have no card bigger than a seven, Mariana. You've heard about a Yarbrough, which is no
Yep.
points, but you're actually not meant to have anything bigger than a nine.
Yep.
This hand can only dream of having a nine. They haven't even got an eight.
What happened to it?
So I don't know what happened on the hand. So
Partner
somebody
opens
added it.
two clubs, strongest bid.
I don't know what happened. Apparently, the odds in getting a hand with no card higher than the seven is one in 254,000.
Oh, where did you get that from?
Somebody worked it out. Somebody cleverer than me worked it out. Anyway, all I'm saying is the chances of you ever seeing another hand like that, Mariana, are remote. And I'll tell you what, if I was you, I'd be pretty pleased about that. I wouldn't want to see another hand like that.
No, I wouldn't. That would be kissing goodbye. Hey, talking about the Vanderbilt team that won, we had an email listener from Matt Brown, and he's currently playing in that tournament that's over there in Louisville. And
So Mariana's been stalking folks, and she's found out there's quite a few Kiwis or ex-Kiwis over there. Michael Whibley, Liam Milne, James Coutts, a few Aussies, Nabil Edgerton, Peter Gill is over there. Who else did you spot, Mariana?
well, Sate Hans was there and Andy Hong.
Oh, so there's heaps of them over there. We know they
That's.
didn't make the final of the Vanderbilt. That's all we know.
We're going to try and hook up with them and they can tell us about what they're doing, which is great.
If you watched any of the final of the Vanderbilt, which I did, if you clicked onto BBO and looked on ViewGraph, they had live commentaries, people talking on both of them. That was quite entertaining.
Didn't realize it was that big a thing, but obviously it is. They've got heaps of people. I just happened to click on the bulletin of yesterday and they had 2,692 tables. I was like, bloody hell.
I know what that is like, Mariana. If you come out of the loo and think, now what? Where was my table again?
2,600. Oh my goodness. Couldn't believe it.
It says, I don't know quite how they calculate this, but it says Louisville ended up with 6,757 tables in total, which is a drop of a little over 5% from a year ago. But hey, still a lot of tables.
Isn't that cool though? They also have celebrity speakers too, and there's a whole range of people that you can go and see.
Who have they
Odd
got there, Mariana?
Things in Bridge. Oh, I wonder what that's about. Norman Beck, that person was speaking about odd things and bridge. The one that I'd picked to go to was by Betty Stasek, and it was The Challenge of Trick One. I would like to see that
Well,
or listen
Mariana,
to
you
it.
should have sent an email into New Zealand Bridge. They might have flown you over there live and exclusive on the Bridge Zone from Louisville.
Maybe next year in March. Yeah, sorry, Kelly Pierce. I won't be here. I'll be going over to Louisville.
Well, Mariana, if you knew the price of travel insurance at the moment, you wouldn't be so keen, I can tell you. It's nearly as much as the flights.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Well, Rotorua is done and dusted. We're back in our normal abodes with Judge Julie. Hello.
Hi.
I'm Rich, Mariana. I'm Rich.
Really?
I've got Judge Julie's prize money from Rotorua.
And the bailiff.
And the bailiff. I was thinking I could leave the country, maybe go to Buenos Aires. No, that would be no good.
You
catch up.
Yeah, you could leave anything, really.
I don't know. Could you even get an Uber up to the airport with your prize money?
They started the long trip home to Auckland early, and I stayed and collected all the moolah.
Oh,
that's right. We're going to see you this week if you want to have dinner. Lamb was cheap this week, so I've got roast lamb to do.
Oh, yeah.
But it might be dependent on getting my money.
Of course.
Roast veggies include kumara?
Yeah.
The listeners have heard our menu for the weekend. I'm sure they're not interested in that. I've got a great question for the judge. I can't wait to hear the answer.
Come on, let's spit it out.
This guy was playing and he was going around the room and he got to this table and the lady who was sitting south was knitting. A bit unusual. But anyway, what happened was she picked up her hand and looked at it and put it face down on the table and resumed knitting while the auction proceeded. One heart, pass, knit one pearl, one spade, pass, two diamonds, pass, knit one pearl, one, three diamonds. Why, whatever, I don't know. But the question is, is she allowed to do that? What can you do at the table? Tell me.
Well, I've got a question. I don't know if that's you knitting, Barry, but okay, I am impressed that you know knit one, pull one, though. Law 74 is conduct and etiquette. And there's quite a few good things in here. A player should maintain a courteous attitude at all times. Avoid making any remark or action that might cause annoyance or embarrassment or interfere with the enjoyment of the game. Follow uniform and correct procedure in calling and playing. As a matter of courtesy, this is the etiquette part, you should refrain from paying insufficient attention to the game, which one could argue is happening when
knitting,
making gratuitous comments, detaching a card before it's your turn to play, prolonging play unnecessarily, as I'm playing on, although knowing all the tricks are yours, for the purpose of disconcerting an opponent, all right? Summoning, and this is an important one because this happens far too often, summoning and addressing the director in a manner discourteous to him or her or to other contestants. Right, violations of procedure are also showing an obvious lack of a further interest in a deal as by folding one's cards. Now, when she was knitting, depending on her focus, it is quite possible that she was still just showing an interest in the game, okay? But yes, it would be a bit distracting. I know people that have read books, knit it, since we're talking about it, when they are dummy, but I actually haven't seen anyone doing that while the auction is in progress and when partner's playing the hand you can, but not when you're defending, right?
What?
One of the bad things is that if you knit when you are not interested in what's going to happen in the auction, so you've got nothing in your hand, right, then that would be a very bad thing because you are basically telling everyone at the table you have got an absolute rubbish hand. If you are renowned for doing this and you stop and you bid occasionally so that you're not showing a disinterest in the hand, but you are actually bidding and you intend to bid at various points, it's just you've seen your hand, you know what it is. You don't need to look at it again while the auction is on because you know what you've got and what you might do. So
I might have a code, though, like knit one, pearl one is this and knit one, pearl two.
Well, I think if that was the case, then people would be screaming for the director very frequently and you might not be seeing them. Generally, no, you would not be knitting during the auction at the bridge table.
But if you were going to, you'd need to do it every hand, which it sounds like perhaps she was, if she was knitting all the way around the room.
Maybe. That's possible. I mean, there are people that know what you've got in your hand and you can put it down and you can still bid appropriately. Most of us like to double check what we've got every now and then to make sure we're making the right decision. It is possible that you can be interested in the auction and bid without looking at your hand after you have first looked at it, because you are required to look at your hand initially to see what you've got. There was a craze many years ago where people tried bidding blind, which sort of got regulated against, because the idea was that you opened the bidding if you had to, and then you kept the bidding going while you could figure out from what the opponent said what you think you should be doing. Now, a really, really bad idea, and actually is completely illegal. But if you're having a social game one night, you would be amazed that if you don't look at your hand, but you just listen to the auction, you would be surprised about how much information you actually get by just sitting there and listening carefully.
We all know
I haven't got past the lady knitting at the table yet.
Yeah,
so.
Anyway, so if you breaks in procedure, and when you do things you're not allowed to do in the procedure, all right, you can still be penalised. This is where the director slow play is often a procedural penalty, because you're not moving to the right speed. When the director calls move, you're nowhere near ready, and you should be, and you're persistently slow. All right, so we have two types of penalties to the director. One is procedural and one is disciplinary. Procedural penalties can be appealed, but as a rule, if you go to an appeal committee, they'll double it rather than remove it. They are there because you are not, where it says that these are what you have to do in the law book, that is what you have to do. So if you put your cards down and look completely disinterested in the auction, all right, then the director will come and warn you that you are not allowed to do that, and if you persist, you will be penalised. You would have to be at the table with the lady in question to see, really, whether she was actually displaying no interest in the auction or whether she actually was interested. People can knit without looking at what they are doing very easily. All right? You sit there in front of the TV, you do things, and you can sit there and you can knit. And once you've got beyond dropping stitches left, right, and centre, you can actually knit quite well without looking at what you're doing.
Well, I don't think I could. But anyway, we all know that Judge Julie's seen lots of things at the bridge table, like centrefolds and whatever. But
that's right. I remember that.
Are you prepared to
tell? Some of us will never forget it.
Are you prepared to tell the headphone story on air?
When we were younger and was playing in Palmerston North, occasionally at tournaments, some of the younger players, and actually I probably was one of the younger players then, used to have an interest in what was happening on the races on a Saturday. So they would have headphones on, listening to the races. That is having them plugged into a radio, because we did not have the internet to be make it really clear about how old I am. Okay,
oh, right.
No such thing as internet. Mobile phones were non-existent.
You had a little tranny.
You have a little tranny. You can plug your headphones in, because we were getting pretty advanced at that point. And you can listen to the race where you've got some money on it.
Wow.
But, again, not recommended for a variety of reasons. In general, because most of us, if we're concentrating on one thing, make mistakes on the other thing. And multitasking like that is not something people commonly do.
What about a glass of Sauv Blanc at the table while you're playing, Julie? What about that? There's a subject dear to your heart.
Well, no, it's not actually. I don't believe in drinking at the table while I'm playing bridge. I think one of the clear indicators with alcohol, and I must admit I really do like a glass of Sauv, is that when you have a drink, you do notice with bridge that you do go a wee bit fuzzy. You don't have to drink a lot to just have a bit of a fuzzy edge to your decision making, all right?
So you get a bit more racier when you have a bit of plonk.
Yeah, so the only time I have a drink at the bridge table is normally when I'm playing, when the last board is on the table, and I might have a drink then if I have one, but normally not till afterwards.
And if you're playing in a team with Judge Julie Mariano, one of the rules is whoever finishes first has to go and get two glasses of Sauv.
Oh, that just applies to Barry with regard to Jenny and I. And he's doing that. All right. Jenny and Barry often finish first. It's a wonderful system, if you ask me.
Now, so what about if, you know, the partner of the knitter?
Yeah.
Well, they must be very casual about it.
No, if you'd have to be comfortable, you would be playing with someone else, or the person, your partner would not be knitting. Back to the smoking era, when I used to smoke, I remember when I first started playing with Patrick, he liked dummy to play the cards. So I couldn't dive out for a cigarette. I stayed and played the cards because that was what he liked, and we're partners. And upsetting your partner is not a good idea if you want to keep playing.
Could you bring a book Barry, bring a book, flick through it. Oh, yep.
Back in the day when people were allowed to smoke at the table, Julie, and I mean, we are aging ourselves a bit here, but people were allowed to smoke at the table. I mean, I was sort of wondering about somebody rolling their own while they were off.
I can't recall ever seeing that happen. Okay. I
I
really
see.
can't.
That
Who
either means it didn't
does?
happen, or Julie can't recall it because she's old and it was a long time ago.
No, those people who rolled their own cigarettes would have rolled a few and put them in their little pouch before they went to bridge, I would say.
Okay.
Ready roll,
Yeah.
tailor-made, were cheaper, so not as many people rolled their own.
I don't think I'd be a very patient partner if my partner decided to start knitting. I would say that the headlines would say "Death at the Bridge Club by Knitting Needles."
Yeah. So generally, I mean, with all things that happen at the bridge table with partnerships, both partners have to be happy. Otherwise, presumably, at some point, they would stop playing. And how much attention is being paid to the auction? Knitting may not be a factor here. Because, as I said, I know quite a few
Oh, yeah.
people who have done a lot of knitting, and they are more than comfortable not to be looking at what they are doing because they know the pattern and they know what they're doing without checking on it. It's just about automatic.
But there you go. They've both got to be happy, Marietta. They can't be grumpy and dopey.
Or sleepy, or any of those other things.
Yeah,
All right.
funny.
Fascinating stuff. Yep.
Hey, just while I've got you, Jules, what are the numbers looking like for
We've got
Auckland?
30, I don't know what the pairs are, but I know we've got 31 teams entered for the teams on the Sunday, which is
Right.
up from last year, which is really good. And apparently the field is looking very strong.
Oh, good.
I think you've got about 20 tables in the pairs when I looked yesterday. It's not too shabby.
No, I know we've got enough junior in the juniors or wherever that we can run the event, which is normally a big problem for Auckland. For whatever reason, they feel that it's too strong, and players in the area of junior intermediate tend to be shy of the congresses, which is a real shame because we try to provide bridge for
Yeah.
absolutely everyone,
Yeah.
you know. And the directing staff are wonderful. Barry will be able to tell you who they are because I probably shouldn't. Absolutely wonderful directing staff.
Nothing like blowing your own trumpet, Marianna.
I wasn't going to
Too much.
say it, Barry.
I can't say anything because it's going to be lamb and roast veggies, so I'm not
Yeah.
complaining.
Yeah, providing I'm happy when you get here.
Yeah, no, sounds great. All righty then. Well, thanks for that. We'll catch you. I'll see you on the weekend. I'm coming up for Monday.
Well, we'll see you on Monday and then we'll catch up on Tuesday. So, anyway,
Will
everyone
do.
have a good and successful week.
Bye.
Okay,
Bye,
bye.
Pam.
Hamilton's holding the restricted pairs coming up in a couple of weeks. You're not going to dabble your toes in there, Barry?
I tell you what, there's one of the toughest tournaments to play in, Mariana. I have played in that a few times, and it's I think restricted pairs are tough on everybody. They're tough on the open players, then they're tough on the non-open players. It's a tough day, but there's always lots of stories, and I'm sure it'll be lots of fun.
The Richmond Room used to be really packed out with us. It was a very popular event. At the moment, Barry, we've only got five tables.
Oh, and when is it coming on, Marianne?
It's on the 7th of April.
So not too far away, not too long for entries to come in, is it?
2 weeks, yeah.
What do you think the reason for that is, Marianne?
Have no idea. People are coming down from Auckland to play in it, which is awesome.
There's a few people from all over the place, but at the moment only five tables. I do know that we had somebody in our club that was a huge fan of this tournament. Used to bully people to play in it every year. Maybe that's the reason. And I think it's a little bit like that on a club night. We've got a couple of club nights which were all but dead, and we've got a couple of people that have been prepared to put the time in, ring around, talk to people, try and get them
Good
back. And
partnerships, yeah.
although they're not exactly going through the roof, the numbers are way better than they were, Mariana.
Well, I wonder if any of your listeners or any clubs out there want to let us know how your partner stewards are getting on with table numbers. Are they increasing or decreasing or what's going on out there? Let us know, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. You might like to come in and tell us your secret if you've got a secret sauce and you've got great table numbers.
And also, what are your partner stewards doing? Are they proactive? Do they ring around, or do they just find somebody a partner if they ring up and ask? It seems to me maybe that's the answer. We need partner stewards that are prepared to ring everybody and try and get people there. It's like herding cats, I know, Mariana, but I think it seems to be the only way to get our table numbers back up to resembling respectability.
To close the show, have you got a tip for us?
A partner makes a forcing bid and it looks like you're going to bid game somewhere and you don't know what. This is a very old tip. It's a Bob Ammann tip. If you haven't got a fit, if you haven't got a stopper in the suit that you need to, well, just too bad. Just bid three no trumps and pray.
Reno drops and pray.
Honestly, sometimes it'll make when it shouldn't. Sometimes it's the best spot anyway. If you honestly can't think of something else to do and you haven't got a good fit for any of your partner's suit, what the hell? Give three no trumps a shot. Maybe the opponents will believe you and think you've got a stopper.
Bit of trickery going on there, Mr. Jones.
Probably desperation more than trickery.
I found this clip of Bob Hammond's. It's a bit dated, so I thought he might have the last word.
I thought there was a lot to the game, and I became very quickly obsessed with attempting to learn it. Now, of course, the problem is that you're solving what amounts to be an infinite puzzle, so no matter what you think you know, there's always more. I personally like to play card games for money. It satisfied both my urges to gamble and compete at the same time. First thing you need is you need to be lucky enough to stay in pretty good health and reasonable level of energy, because if you don't have energy, you're cooked. Doesn't matter how much you know about the game. The two most important elements are concentration and energy, and the motivation to concentrate and to focus, you just have to have the energy. The partner that I had the most success with for a long period of time was Bobby Wolf. We played together for 25 years. Certainly did very well. A big percentage of my wins were with Bobby and then Paul Soloway. And I played together for about 10 years until his death in 2007. Elements of success are pretty hard to totally break down. You've got skill, you've got the element of being in the right place at the right time, and luck factors. You're probably kidding yourself if you think that you can just sit down and win in a game of this nature. You're going to need some breaks. If the breaks go against you, you lose. It's as simple as that. There are people who play the game because they're intrigued with the intellectual satisfaction of solving problems. There are people who play the game as a recreational outlet. I play the game to beat the opponents.
See you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.